Meanwhile, in the US, Trump is making history as he becomes the first president, past or present, to face a criminal trial. Longtime US correspondent Bruce Shapiro is here to report on the first day of the trial and the ongoing tension in the Middle East between Israel and Iran. But Bruce is, of course, contributing editor with The Nation magazine and executive director of the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia University. Bruce, before we get to the Middle East, Trump was finally in court today facing criminal charges. Remind us why.
In the dock, I mean, and even before I remind you why, I have to say that as someone who, as a teenager, remembers the chance of jail to the chief being directed in that case at Richard Nixon, it really is an extraordinary American moment to see one of our former chief executives in the dock. It's not so unusual in other parts of the world, but it's never happened before. This is, you need a scorecard, of course, to keep track of Donald Trump's many legal problems. But this is his New York City fraud trial brought by prosecutor Alvin Bragg. This is not one of the cases that Trump could get himself out of by being elected president. He doesn't get to dismiss indictments brought by state prosecutors, even if he were reelected to the presidency. So he is really perhaps on the hook with this one. And at the heart of this case, in which we began with jury selection today and some sharp words from Judge Merchan overseeing this trial, at the heart of this is the $130,000 hush money payment to Stormy Daniels. And as we've said before, Philip, you know, it's easy to say, well, it's just about someone trying to pay off a lover to keep the truth from getting out. And in New York state law, that would be a misdemeanor. What is making it a felony here, and what is so perhaps consequential if Trump is convicted, is that District Attorney Bragg is arguing that, in fact, because this was money paid in an attempt to keep the Stormy Daniels affair, or non-affair, if you believe Trump, regardless, the money was paid to keep it out of the headlines during the 2016 election. And because the money was actually paid after Trump had been elected, this amounts to a conspiracy to defraud the voters. It's not just about, oh, trying to cover up a little peccadillo. It is, in D.A. Bragg's theory, anyway, an attempt to manipulate the 2016 election, to defraud the electorate by depriving them of information that could perhaps change the outcome of the election. This is an interesting legal theory. It's a powerful one. It's also one that hasn't ever quite been tried. So in truth, we don't know how this is going to end up. But thus far, we are in front of a no-nonsense judge who has, Judge Juan Merchan, has turned down demand after demand by Donald Trump to recuse himself. He is considering fining former President Trump for violating terms of a gag order. This is now going ahead full steam. And today, I think about a dozen prospective jurors were interviewed. And if whatever jurors are chosen will listen to a trial in the coming weeks or months involving 34 felony counts that, if he's convicted, could put Donald Trump in prison for up to 4 years.
Jury selection. The trial's being held in Manhattan. Is it possible to find any potential juror that will not have a view on the case?
Well, that's not the standard, actually. The standard is, can jurors be fair? And can they consider the facts, or do their views of Donald Trump or of the prosecution overwhelm their ability to judge. Today, out of about 96 jurors, about half of them evidently just raised their hands at the outset and said, "I can't be fair here. No way can I be fair." And they were immediately excused. Of course, New York City is Democratic territory. There are certainly plenty of Republicans in New York City and plenty of Trump voters. But, you know, Donald Trump has tried arguing for a change of venue. That was denied. He's tried arguing for a change of judge, because this is the same judge who oversaw the fraud trial against his company. That's been denied. So now the defense lawyers and the prosecutors are going through and interviewing one person after another. They each side will get, I think it is 10 peremptory challenges, just get to challenge, get throw out jurors for no reason whatsoever, that they have to declare. They also can challenge individual jurors before the judge, and the judge gets to decide. This is probably going to go on for a few weeks. It's going to take a while. Not so much to find jurors who can be objective as it is to find jurors who one side or the other doesn't object to.
Talking to Bruce Shapiro, and Bruce, that bloke sitting up the back is Dick Wolf. He's taking notes, because this is going to make a hell of an episode for Law and Order. Will Trump testify himself?
Well, he's not obligated to testify. You don't have to testify. If it may, of course, you know, incriminate you. The Fifth Amendment does apply to state courts as well as the federal court. But he was in court today. It is likely that he'll testify. Today he variously glowered, laughed, and fell asleep. He's
you mean complaining. He feigned asleep? Fake sleep.
You know, hard to say. Some of the reporters who were there, who I trust, seemed to think that he was actually nodding out. And if you ever sat through jury selection, it's not impossible.
Now, Stormy won't be giving evidence. I guess the star witness will be Michael Cohen.
Well, Stormy may, she can be called, and actually, it appears that in addition to Michael Cohen, Trump's former lawyer, now despised by the former president, it's likely that we're going to hear from the aptly named David Pecker, the former editor-in-chief of the National Enquirer, publisher, I should say, the National Enquirer, who has testified already before the grand jury about the so-called catch-and-kill scheme in which people like Stormy Daniels would be paid money for their stories so that the stories would not be published to protect Donald Trump, other tabloid journalists, and even another woman whom former President Trump is alleged to have had an affair with some years ago and who also was paid off in 2016 in a catch-and-kill scheme. The judge has already indicated that that kind of information will be permitted in court. So this is going to be a tabloid spectacular, no matter what the outcome of the trial. A lot of truly dirty laundry is going to be aired. The transcripts of the Access Hollywood tape, we already know, are going to be read aloud. All the stuff that former President Trump has sought to distance the public's memory from is going to be brought right up onto the table.
Meanwhile, Biden is having to keep his attention firmly on the Middle East and the and ensuring that the conflict between Israel and Iran does not further escalate. But Bruce, remind us about how this latest dispute started.
The fear-inducing, fearful barrage of Iranian missiles, which hurtled toward Israel and were shot down over the weekend, were inspired after, of course, years of shadow conflict between Iran and Israel, when the Netanyahu government made the decision to take out some Iranian officers by by striking an Iranian consulate in Syria, Iranian diplomatic territory, which of course nations consider to be their own sovereign territory. This is not just an Iranian fantasy. This is all countries. And what we are told in the background is that the Biden administration was not happy that Netanyahu did this. It was viewed as an escalation. And we certainly can see in the events of the last couple of days some very complicated theater going on. The Iranians wanted to be seen to be responding to Israel's attack on their consulate, and yet it appears they didn't want to be seen as inflicting too much damage or engaging, escalating to a protracted war. Netanyahu, of course, and Israel wanted to be seen as responding, but not responding too harshly. And in the middle of all of this is Joe Biden. In the middle of this is Joe Biden, who has been more and more angry and distanced from Netanyahu over the Gaza war in recent weeks and has become openly critical. And yet, leading up to this Iranian attack, declared once again that America's support for Israel is ironclad. So there's a tremendous sort of contradiction there. At the same time, if you look back over the events of this weekend, what you see is that those missiles were shot down not just by the Iron Dome system, which the U.S. helps pay for and construct and so on, the Israel's anti-missile system, but in fact were shot down by a coalition of American, British, French, but also Jordanian airplanes. And this was done, among other things, in airspace over Saudi Arabia and Egypt. What Biden really did here, I think, was relatively quietly, lean into the coalition he had been hoping to put together before October 7th of some Arab states. You can call them moderate Arab states or not. I'm not sure that applies to Saudi Arabia, but certainly non-Iranian Arab states, and Israel in a kind of coalition against Iran. This was something he was working on with an eye toward a Palestinian state, and is still in, if you talk to folks in the administration, the idea is still there that even after all the horrors of Gaza, there might be the possibility, they hope, with ever decreasing hope, I think, but they still lean into this idea that finally it would be that kind of a coalition that could create stability in the Middle East and create the conditions for a Palestinian state. You know, whatever happened before and whatever happens coming out of this, the successful, relatively moderate playing out of these events thus far suggests that on this bit of terrain, though not the Gaza war, but on this bit of terrain, Biden's strategy has been successful.
Thus endeth the Shapiroette. Bruce Shapiro, contributing editor with The Nation magazine and executive director of the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia University.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.